Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Moon, Moo, and You, the Collective Wisdom. My name is Kate Loving Schenck, and Joan Adams and I host the show. Our guest today is astrology's astrologer, otherwise known as Sheila Odette. Sheila is one of my mother's best friends, and today is my mother's birthday, and she would be 95 today. Sheila will be on Moon, Moo, and You, the Collective Wisdom, every second Tuesday of every month, if we have a good time today, which of course we will. The call-in number is 347-205-9200. Sheila's webpage is www.astrologiesastrologer.com, and you can reach her blog through that page. First of all, here is Joan Adams.
And good afternoon.
Hello, Joan. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you.
Great.
Excited. This is going to
yes.
be super.
Well, there's one other caller here which has a 901 area code, but let me just see who that might be. Hang on. Hello there. If you would like to just press 1 to unmute yourself or just listen, that would be great. I'm not sure. I think maybe Sheila might be having a little bit of a problem getting on, is my guess. What do you think, Joan? I mean, it seems possible.
Probably.
But,
yeah.
Yes, I have my phone, other phone available if she wants to call me. Okay, so today has been a pretty wild day.
It has, and congratulations to you. Brand
Thank
new
you.
Giant Squid Angel.
Yes, I've gone out a little bit and did a little blessing.
Oh, wonderful.
Spread my wings and sprinkled some angel dust around the Squidoo community.
And that feels wonderful, doesn't it?
It really does, yes.
It's fun. It's
well,
fun.
Do you think that that doing Squidoo angeling sort of puts you in the mood for being a real angel?
Yeah, I think it does. I think any time you can do any little act that makes somebody smile,
yes,
that's angel work. I mean, in my mind it is anyway. And so, yeah, definitely. What you're doing.
Like a little tingling bell is represents an angel getting their wings. Remember that in the It's a Wonderful Life?
Right. Same kind of thing. And what you're doing is acknowledging someone's work, you know, especially when you acknowledge someone's writing. I mean, it doesn't get any more personal than that, I think.
I think so, too. And
hey, that looks good to me. That's wonderful. Betty Rush is with us, so that's good.
Oh,
hello,
wonderful.
Betty
what?
Rush.
Yes.
Think so, Kate, and I think you'll enjoy it. I understand that the Angel Forum was just flying this afternoon. Have you been into that on the email?
Well, I couldn't really access much of anything today because of we were rehearsing all day. And it was very strenuous activity, even though I was able to keep my phone sort of on the alert about the announcement of being an angel. And I thought that was very special, you know, today, like I just said, is my mom's birthday, or did I just say that? And I think I did a few times. And I think that being a Squid Angel, getting that announcement today on her birthday is very special.
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Yes, that's wonderful.
Hello, Sheila.
Hi.
Hello, Sheila. We're so glad you're here.
Hi, Joan.
Yes, this is Joan Adams, and Joan Adams, this is Sheila Odette, astrology's astrologer. Yay!
Yes. She is so smart. She didn't know to dial one before she dialed the number. I got it now.
Well, I certainly hope you weren't stressed out over that.
What? No, I'm laughing.
Okay.
Very funny.
We've done them all. Any mistake you can possibly make out of here, we've done it.
I love your accent, Joan. That's really neat.
Well, it's
everybody loves that accent.
Well, I love the deep voice. It's very deep.
Yeah.
Well, she sounds like Lauren Bacall.
Oh, how nice. Thank you.
Yeah.
I look like her too, y'all.
Well,
really?
you sound like your chart. Your astrology chart.
Oh.
Because the whole chart, there are 12 houses, and I don't know, are you aware, have you ever worked with your chart, Joan?
I had someone do a little bit of it one time,
mm-hmm.
and I was in a meeting with a group of people, so I just got bits and pieces.
Well,
I'm just very anxious to hear what you see.
Well, you have a bowl, what we call a bowl. And that's, in some ways, Kate knows that's Mark Edmund Jones. There's different kinds of things like bowls and a different kind of patterns. But a bowl is something that everything is in the bottom of the chart. So it's like a yin energy, and it's like a half moon because you can't see it, I'm telling you. It looks like a half moon. And it means a very yin energy, a very nurturing mother energy, a very energy that takes information into and puts a lot of ingredients in a bowl, like a cake, and then comes out with something new. And the reason I'm saying comes out with something new is because the divine circle is the sun in Aries, which is rising, which means the Aries is action. It's looking for a solution. It's looking for an answer. And that's in the first house. And the divine circle is a dot in the center, and I call it the God seed because it's how you plant your seed on this planet and what you've come here to do and how you're going to do it. So the sun sign in the chart is like the top of the mountain. And a lot of times, everybody at bars, et cetera, says, what's your sun sign and all that? That's the process of where you're trying to get to. So when you fulfill your sun sign, that's your destiny in some ways. The moon sign, which is half of the circle, is really the emotional, a lot of astrologers say it's the mother, but it's really the first womb that anybody's in is the mother's womb. So if you're in the mother's womb, of course, that would be the environment. And then when you come out, you're with the family, which is the environment, and then you're with the school and the church and the community. So the moon opens up until eventually, in some charts, it becomes the world, such as, Michael Jackson or Patrick Swayze or those kind of charts. They open up until they encompass the whole energetic field. Here, the moon is in the fourth house. And when I say the fourth house, that's its own house. In other words, it's its own movie. It's where it's the happiest. And moon in Cancer is in its own sign. So what the planets are really are actors. And the moon would be the actor, and the sun would be, and the sign would be the costume it's in, and the house is in. The house that it's in is the stage that it performs on. So that makes it a little bit easier. So you have the moon in Cancer in the really bottom of, I call it the belly of the whale. So it's, and if you think of the ocean, then you think of the vastness of some time that you want to encompass the world in a very vast kind of deep, a sentence would be a vast, deep way that you want to experience the world. So you bring people in from everywhere or draw them into your bowl, such as Kate and me and whoever else is listening. It's like you're not really moving now, but you're drawing everything into your bowl. The most interesting thing about this chart is, for me, I work with a gestation point, which is like the ninth house cusp. It's the ninth house where you go into the ninth house. And like a month ago, your moon changes signs every 2.5 years by progression. The chart is moving right away. So your moon went into the ninth house like a month ago. And 4 months ago, it began the overture or like moving in. And the gestation point, Joan, is for me, it's getting lined up with exactly the force or exactly the line that you incarnated to do. So it's almost like you have stepped into an adventure of the ninth house. And the ninth house is the esoteric house. It's the house of myths. It's the house of fairy tales. It's the house of all otherworldly things. And moon and Sagittarius is the same thing. Sagittarius is the arrow that flies above everything. It's way out there. So that you're 4 months into that, 5 months actually, but your gestation point is for Sag. So even though you have all this other stuff in your chart, the Sagittarian thing is really vast information or huge information or esoteric information or mythical information in your DNA. You can talk now.
Okay. I've got questions. Oh, I've got a million questions.
I mean, I say you can talk now and then, too, and then I start rattling on again. That's me, you know? Well, it's a shame that you can't see it. I mean, I guess I'll have to send you. We can talk about it better with the visual, you know, in front of you.
Yeah. I just don't know that I would understand it, but I would. So if you were, what is it telling you? I don't understand any of it. So something big is happening. I've got the thing about gathering people.
Okay, now you tell me what you feel in your life that you have stepped into a new territory and you stepped into the 9th, 10th, 11th, and 12th house for me are a transcendent place. It's the place of mystery. So, well, basically, I don't understand is the best sentence. basically, the ninth house is spiritual enlightenment, and the midheaven has to do with your connection with your group. I think we are vast energy of DNA or whatever you want to call it that wraps around the planet, but I think there is a special channel that certain people are specifically trying to work out for the planet. So you have a Sagittarius midheaven and a Sagittarius gestation point, which is complicated. It's a double house cusp. And it means basically that your aim is to go where a place of mystery that you don't understand. But you do understand, but you don't. And the next house is if you build it, they will come. So it means whatever you build, what you begin. In other words, it's fake it till you make it, you know. It's like working right brain. And when you work with the right brain and you're trying to create something, you go out and do all kinds of different things and write with your left non-dominant hand and pick up all different kind of books and look at paintings and do all kinds of things that stimulate the right brain. And that's where you are. I mean, the encouragement, if I was doing your chart, which I kind of am, is,
yep.
What?
Yeah, I said yes.
Which I kind of am. The encouragement is the mystery and the not understanding, to jump where you don't understand, to not to go with stuff that's linear and you do understand. Because if we continue to do what we understand, we never stretch into the right brain. I think that the planet right now, the whole planet is stretching into the right brain. It's stretching into a place that before, a while ago, and I'm from the theater, so I'll talk theater language. It means, you know, creative artists and painters and people that are in the theater. Oh, they were dismissed because, you know, those are right brain people. But the right brain is the brain that sees the whole. It sees the whole show. The left brain is pretty articulate into breaking things down. And right now, it's a little off subject, but you're in the right brain territory now. Your moon is in the right brain territory. So you're drawing people. Hey, look who you're talking to. You're drawing people into your circle that are very right brain. Okay.
Yeah.
And there, here I am.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, Joan does gather people. She she gathers people from all over the internet. People just love her. I'm sure you gather people all over your life too, Joan. You know, the real, quote, real life.
Yeah. Well, you are a gatherer.
Yes.
It's interesting. So right now I am in a particularly creative spot.
You know, the word creative is great, but I would even elaborate on that a bit and say it's a magical creative spot.
Ooh.
Almost a magical world, you know, almost a world, you know, a world of really new, even though it's a world of new exploration. And it's a world that you haven't quite explored before. Well, maybe when you were around 26, because the moon came around, maybe in those years, maybe there was a kind of a tinge of it. And now you can really focus on it.
Wow, I'd have to sit and think where I was at 26.
Well, you don't have to do that right now.
No, but that was a long time ago.
Well, you know, when you do the Uranian wheel, which I work Uranian, I'm pretty eclectic. I work non-traditional and traditional and all. The thing is, you know, that we go through our life and we get stuck in different pockets of our life. And what the chart does is shows where these pockets are repetitive. The Uranian astrology shows where these pockets are repetitive. They're repeated things. And each time you get into victim consciousness, we repetitively repeat things over and over again. And each time we repeat them and react to something the same way, that energy builds. And it gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And we get isolated. I call it in a comfort zone. And we don't try to solve it. And in order, what astrology does and what the Uranian wheel does is it shows you to feel the feelings of those victim consciousness places in ways that you can really address them, not by defending them or repressing them or judging them or anything, just saying, I created this thing or I created this experience, not blaming on the other person. I created this experience to learn something. And then in doing that, you tell the story and you feel the feelings, and then you can collapse the energy in some way. It doesn't matter if you collapse it at 4 or 10 or the age you are now. If you collapse the energy, it collapses all the way back. And then you can integrate a new way of being. That's the place where you are right now.
Wow.
I hope you got that.
I did. Thank you.
You're welcome.
That's interesting.
And the greatest thing is that we can re-listen, Joan. You can re-listen to this and just, you know, let it seep into your consciousness.
Now, when I work, I do a composite chart with you and Kate. So what I did then was I put two charts together.
Ooh.
And
I divided
if the moon, her moon, your moon's at one place. There's a, you know, 360 degrees in the zodiac. So everything is at a degree. So really, if you do the mathematics, it's longhand, but you divide in and you find out where the middle part is and the middle part of where two charts come together. So why are you two working together?
Oh, I'd love to know that.
So when I did that, I got a gestation point for the two of you together of Aquarius. Now,
oh,
yes.
Innovation.
Yeah, well, Aquarius is breaking the ceiling.
Yeah.
I mean, we are in a time of breaking the ceiling. Barack Obama has broke the ceiling. I mean, we're really in a time of breaking the ceiling, okay?
And if
you think about how we're talking to each other right now, it's certainly magical because I can't see you, you can't see me. So it is in an energy channel that we're talking. And it's very mystical, too. It's like the Aquarian 11th house, you know? And a lot of other people may be listening to us, too, which we're not even talking to at this moment. That's Aquarius. It means Aquarius is working on the planet because the planet, by information, is getting smaller. I mean, I was sitting in my car outside the other day, and Joanne handed me the cell phone, and I was talking to England. And don't you ever go, oh, my God.
Yes.
I mean, how can this be? You know, this person is talking to you and you're going, oh, my God, that's – or Tortola. You know, my friend in Tortola is now Skyping me and I'm sitting there looking at her and you go, that's the magic of the Aquarian energy. So, okay, so you two together in a gestation are birthing something of the same caliber. Of bringing people together in energy, eclectic of all kinds of things that they practice, and bringing them together like a whole matrix thing, and that's what's on the gestation point. Now the sun in this chart, the God seed, is Piscean, so it's a Piscean sun sign, which means the Piscean energy, you know, that is the mythology around Jesus, okay? The whole Piscean thing. And I think that the thing is being taken out of the myth that he was a hero instead of a victim. You know, if you listen to some people tell the story, they'll say he suffered and he did all this. And you let it, and other people tell the story and say he survived and he was a hero. And basically, you know, he was superior in some that he, no matter, you know, he went right through every challenge. And also that the whole point he said was in all of the New Testament, I'll only heal you if you believe, and you know, you believe you can heal yourself. So that is very Piscean, whether you're going to be a victim or a hero. And the sun is in Pisces and Venus is in Pisces. It also has to do, the Piscean energy, with the mystery of love here, the mystery of sending out loving energy, and whatever you vibrate out and cause comes back in effect. So that is what the midheaven here is. So, and Mercury in Aries is the communication thing. It means that you're slicing through things. The Aries thing is that you two are both together in this chart, hunting for solutions. Of course, people are calling in with challenges and problems, but correct me if I'm wrong. The intention here is to show them ways to heal. Is that not the intention?
Right.
That would definitely be the intention, yeah.
Right. So what you're seeing then about the show,
mm-hmm.
is just, and when you say Kate and I, yes, we're friends, but we are also doing the show,
mm-hmm.
Is that we are on an obvious path to you. And it just seems like a natural thing when you look at it on the chart. We've always felt anyway that, you know, for some mm-hmm. reason this thing is happening and it's bigger than we are, and it's a faith walk. We're walking in faith and we don't know where this is going, but for some reason we're supposed to be doing it, and so we are.
I have a wonderful story about that. You know, I was in I studied in New York astrology, and Michael Luton, one of my teachers, was in this classroom, and this person was late. It was so adorable. And she came in and she said, but you know, I'm a Pisces. And he said, then you should have felt your way here. And I said, there you go, Michael. That was good. And you just said, you know, the feeling. Pisces is the deep feeling of faith, the deep feeling of knowing what you're doing is right. But in the 12th house, right on the ascendant, is Uranus in Gemini, and Uranus in Gemini is, you know, it's Uranus is like the buildings coming down on 9/11. They were there, and then when you tuned in on television, you said, "What am I watching? A movie?" You just couldn't believe it was happening, and then they fell like almost straight down, which is another thing because that's literally impossible. So they felt, but that's Uranian. And that and Pisces is what happened afterwards. Compassionate happened right then in the building everywhere. Everybody wanted to help. They'd have pulled anybody out of that building. You know, I had clients that said, the one client said she was running in the street and somebody stopped her and she said, "What do you want?" And they said, "We just want to take the ashes out of your face, off your eyes, so you can see where you're going."
Where's her
Yeah.
So it's like Pisces is that stillness after the war, after walking around the battlefield. Pisces is, you know, you see in the movies like Braveheart and all that cloud.
Mm-hmm.
And it, Pisces is when you're bringing the compassion and the spiritual and the love back in.
Yeah. So I want to say, are we through the worst of it then and we're moving into a peacetime, right?
Yes, whatever you want, Joan.
What you're saying.
Yeah.
I think whatever your intention is the more people that have the intention that we're moving, you two are moving in, what your intention is, if you're moving toward peace, then you're moving toward peace. I think the intention is you're moving toward war, then somebody's moving toward war.
Gotcha.
So it's, you know, cause and effect, you know.
So that's a choice.
Yes, it's a choice, and I think that instead of looking at cause, we constantly are dealing with effect. And so we need to basically go back to every single thing around us that we draw a circle around is everybody that comes in is a mirror of ourselves, because if we were working with ourselves at a very deep level, we wouldn't bring in negative people. And then right away we try to shun them instead of saying, what part of myself do I have to work out here? I have to learn something from this, whatever I see as negative here.
Yeah,
so,
how did I invite you and why?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nothing is right or wrong. It just is what it is and how you handle it and what choice you make. The thing about the astrological chart, as I was saying to Kate before, is that it's an ancient art. It's not a religion, and it's an art that was used by Notre Dame, by Darwin, by all of these famous astronomers. Everybody in the ancient time, even Washington, is set up in Ben Franklin studied astrology. It's set up on an astrological base. So we have this tool that every one of us can really look at our pattern, but we don't use it. We especially don't use it in America. If I do a charts for England, they tend to have charts done when the children are like 12 years old, and then I say to the parents, what did you think of the chart? They said, we didn't listen. We just gave it right to them. So they have and China and India, they have a lot more respect for the art of astrology than we do in the United States of America. So we have this tool, and we can look at it, and we don't use it. People go and get their tarot cards done, and I always go, tarot is wonderful, but here you have your own card.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you have your own moment of birth. You have the moment that you incarnated. You have that burst of energy that became you, and people don't use it, which is fascinating to me. It's kind of what.
I'm trying to come up with another. I want another question on the show then. So looking at the chart,
mm-hmm.
What do you see? I mean, you know Kate and I, you don't know us, you don't know me that well, but basically you know Kate. So,
mm-hmm.
You know, our intention certainly is healing and love and
mm-hmm.
Whatever wisdom we can draw into the universe.
And Jupiter and Gemini is immense information.
Excuse me?
Immense information. Very eclectic information. information for nurses, and information for people that are in trouble, and information information for everybody. Jupiter in Gemini is huge information.
Got it. Okay.
And Vesta is very prominent beside Jupiter, and Vesta is it's an asteroid, but it represents the nine people, nine virgins around a sacred flame that never went out in the ancient time, and that was supposed to be in it's supposed to be in Washington too, in the Rotunda, and it was filled in, but that's what Washington is supposed to be built around. And Vesta means holding up that eternal flame. I can't get it out. Like at John Kennedy's grave. And at the Olympics, it symbolizes going up all those steps and lighting that flame so that all men can come together in a win-win fashion. That's Aquarius too, by the way. Coming together, it's an Olympian sign. It's like the Olympics, that everybody comes together. And the most beautiful thing about the Olympics is the end, when everybody gathers in the stadium, all the different nations. They no longer walk in as countries individually. Aquarius is everybody mingles with everybody else. There is no more war. There is no more of hostility. It's everybody blending together. And both, right now, both Jupiter... You know that Jupiter, as we do this show today, went direct in Aquarius. And,
wow.
Yeah, that's really big. And Jupiter, Chiron, Neptune are a big thing around this show, the Aquarian energy. And now Kate's going to be interested in this. The person that really brought Kate and I together was her mother, and it's her birthday today.
Right.
Which she would be 95.
95.
Yes, and so... She had in her chart, Kate, a Jupiter-Uranus conjunction, Jupiter-Uranus conjunction in her chart, and that is being aspected exactly today. It's in an intercepted house, which means she basically is running the show here.
Well, what else
is there? Thank you very much.
Well, it's really neat that... somebody from the other side is, you know, Aquarius allows the veil to be broken.
Mm-hmm.
That's what Aquarius does. It's, you know, and if we are all one and we're all forms of DNA and energy, yes, of course, this, because if I'd have never met Kitty Loving Shank way back when, we wouldn't be here doing this right now.
Right.
That's right.
And it would... Step. You never know when a seed is planted how it's going to manifest,
right.
How the tree is going to grow.
Well, there's someone knocking at my door. I'm going to ask you this because I'm so intrigued by it.
Mm-hmm.
I have a mockingbird trying to get into the house for the last.
You do?
Yes. Yeah. And who is it? I keep trying to think, who is this?
Am well, it's probably Kitty.
But I'm wondering, she said, what are you doing? You know, you better lead my girl in the right direction here. But really, it's kind of interesting because now you're saying, you know, I mean, I new opportunity, Betty Rush, my sister, who is also listening in the chat room,
uh-huh.
She keeps saying the mockingbird is opportunity.
Sure.
She keeps saying opportunity is knocking, opportunity is knocking. This poor bird has absolutely beat on the front door, the back door, every window of this house. Trying to get in, and of course, if you open the door, she flies away. But it represents something. I've never had anything like this happen before.
Well, in processing, you go right about it. You write with your left hand about it. Say, what does the bird want? Make it real. Do a process.
Okay.
I mean, because if you get it out of your head and out of the visual, you know. The way we process things and take it out of just thinking about it and put it on paper, then it becomes visual where you can see the writing. You will be shocked what you write.
No, I've done left-handed writing before.
Mm-hmm.
I will do that. I had not thought about doing it.
Well, the right brain is in charge of the non-dominant hand.
Right.
So I, if I work with people with childhood, you know, if I'm working with their stuff in childhood, I tell them to start drawing or writing with the left hand or the non-dominant hand, because that excites the right brain.
Right.
And if you notice, mostly all the presidents are left-handed.
That's interesting.
That's interesting. I did an entire workshop one time, attended a workshop.
Mm-hmm.
We did a collage with our left hands.
How wonderful is that?
It was fascinating. And she had the whole room full of things we could go get and add to the collage.
Oh, it was fascinating
stuff. It was just fun.
Yes.
It really was.
Well, whenever we let the right brain loose, it just loves it, because it's, you know, we don't let it loose enough.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I have a question about whether, is this the age of Aquarius now?
I think so. I think we've been in the age of Aquarius for a while, though. I mean, for years and years and years.
Really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, everybody's talking about 2012.
Yes.
There always seems to be, you know, before it was the conversion, and then there's 2012. There always seems to be a thing to make us focus into the future instead of in the moment, in the process of the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And then if we can focus on that, and you know, it's similar to paparazzi on television instead of focusing on what. I mean, news has become paparazzi now.
Mm-hmm.
Which you're going, hey, wait, you know, we don't have Walter Cronkite and these people that, you know, it's almost like we need to focus in the moment. And what will happen in 2012 will happen in 2012, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And the more we focus on love and connection, I said in the harmonic conversion, if everybody prayed like that, every day at a certain time, can you imagine what would happen to the planet? That's Aquarian.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's the Aquarian energy factor. If everybody did that, and when they say prayer circle around the world, when it goes on the computer or something, everybody pray, do you not feel a difference in the energy if you go out on your deck and things?
Oh, yeah. Very much.
It's like I never really told you this story, Kate, so I'm just going to say it on the air because it has to do with Kitty Loving Shank.
Oh, good.
Your father, when the ashes were in the church, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And a friend of mine, Kitty Loving's ashes were in the church, and a friend of mine said, Sheila, I don't think anybody has those ashes. And I said, why? He said, because I saw Frank leave.
without them, you mean?
Huh?
She saw Frank leave without the ashes.
Yeah, Bill Madonna saw Frank leave, and he didn't have any box or anything.
Yeah.
So he said, I think that she's still in the church. That's the way he talked to me. And it was a harmonic conversion. That's why I'm bringing this up.
Yeah.
So he said, no one took them, and the church is empty, Sheila. So I went over, and there was Kitty Loving Shank beside the typewriter. And I said... I said, Kitty Loving, you can't be by the typewriter. So I picked her up, and I carried her over to my deck. And I spent the entire harmonic conversion talking to Kitty's ashes on the deck.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And I swear she talked back. Oh, Sheila. She called me Sheila, honey. Sheila, honey.
Huh? She called you Mary Sheila.
She called me Mary Sheila, honey. So, you know, I thought that's a wonderful story about her because she was just quite a character. And Kate looks like her, talks like her, and acts like her.
I have heard that. I have heard that.
That's it's like amazing. A rebirth of Kitty Loving Shank.
So she could very well be knocking on my front door.
Oh, she's capable. You better answer.
Well, as I explained one time on another show, she does appear to me as a snowy white owl.
Oh, that's beautiful. Isn't
yes.
it beautiful? Wisdom.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my.
Sacred wisdom.
Exactly.
Well, Kitty Loving Shank was the moon in Leo, conjunct Neptune. And the moon in Leo is in Leo as we speak, girls.
Okay.
Out of all the moon signs in the zodiac, moon moves every 2.5 days. It moves 12 to 14 degrees a day. And today, when we're on this radio show, the moon is in Leo. So that, and if you'd look at the moon as surrounding us and what we're pulling in, that would mean we are pulling her in.
Right.
And for everybody out there that's far out, too bad.
No, it just makes sense about the moon. That's the way the moon acts.
Yeah, well, you know, she's a Libra, too, okay, of
yeah.
course, you know. And the destiny of the Libra is to balance out the world. When they're here on this planet, it's to balance out different kinds of relationship. But when they go to the other side, it's to continue balancing out the world behind the veil to this world.
Mm-hmm.
So that continues on. So I don't
right.
think her work is finished. Okay, questions.
Well, we had other people on the line, and I have opened up the line.
Okay.
But I don't know who the person is shy and hasn't said anything. If you would like to say something, please do. We have a lot of people in the chat room.
That's good.
Chat room.
Let me just
cool.
say questions. Questions. I'll just
so as far as the show is concerned,
yes.
what you would see is keep doing what we're doing.
Oh, my gosh, Joan, yes. Yes.
Yeah.
It's a new frontier. It's the moon in Aries. It's a new frontier. And everything in this chart is in the 9th, 10th, 11th, and 12th house. It's transcendent. It's breaking. Transcendent to me is like transformation, transmutation. All the words with trance is like pulling people out of a trance. It's like making them conscious. It's like bringing them consciously to open up and to look at the world consciously. So that's what this chart represents. Information to help them do that or to help
and
them.
So a lot of the planets are on the upper part of the chart. And with Joan's chart, a lot of, most if not all, of her information is on the bottom part.
Which means
the
composite chart balances out Joan's chart.
Yeah.
It means it's two halves of a chart. The composite chart of the radio show is all on the top, and your natal chart, Joan, is in the bottom. So what that does is balance the two halves of the chart out.
Interesting.
How long have you been doing this show?
Since my birthday, the 3rd of March, except that we did a practice show one day where I didn't know how to operate anything, the switchboard. I didn't know how to bring Joan on, and I just winged it, got on, didn't know how to bring anybody on, so I just spoke for one straight hour, and that would be probably that would be the moment where
so it was the date
the
was it was actually
the,
what
the actual chart of the show would have to be that day, I think. And
okay, give me the time you did that.
Well, that would be 6 o'clock. And was that the 20th? Let me look at a calendar here.
It was at 6 o'clock.
Yes.
And, Joan, was that the 25th of February or something? I don't have a calendar in front of me. Do you?
Well, you can tell me. You can call me later and tell me.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because that would be the chart for the show.
Okay. Well, then for next week, I'll run that chart.
Yeah, I'm just real interested. So the message for us with the show, I understand, I think, which is what you're doing is confirming what we both have believed is exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And for me is to keep exploring.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. And, you know, Uranus and Gemini, when you have Uranus and Gemini in this chart, it means that people that are listening and people there is almost an instant wake-up call at times. You find when you do charts or you do work with people and you find that when they call you back, they have locked on to one sentence that you didn't really think was too important, but it was extremely important and could change their life.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the kind of metaphor that I'm giving you for the show.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people are locking on to different things and going, wow. And then when you lock on to something and you start researching it and go to, you know, the borders or to the library or whatever, things just start happening. Mm-hmm. When you put your foot on the path and you find other people and you find groups and you find books and you find paintings, you find theater, you find everything, you know, that has to do with that particular thing.
Synchronicity.
And that's what this chart's about. It's helping people do that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I find in the chart. That's because Mercury in Aries is, oh, my gosh, I should do that. Oh my God! I'm thinking about that instead of just thinking about it. Life rewards action. Go do it.
Yeah.
And if you don't like it, it'll lead you to something else.
Right. Yeah. And
walk through the open doors.
Yes.
Yeah.
Now, how does your chart figure in to? Because you'll be coming on the show, and I must tell our listening audience that you will be here every second Tuesday of every month. So you are going to be figuring pretty prominently in this show, too.
Yes, I am.
And I feel that everything that you said about the show pertains to you as well.
Right. So
really cool.
Yes,
very cool.
Yes, it's very cool. It's very cool. So, my chart fits in really well with the whole dynamic, but I don't think we have time to talk about that right now. We can talk about it the next time.
Right.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And I did post your blog post today, and I found that it was beautiful in the way that you described the chart. Now, and I wanted to tell, while we're talking about this, Joan, that when you receive your birth chart in the mail, even though you can't look at it, you won't be able to look at it and know exactly what it means, except for what Sheila has just said. But you can look at that as a mandala, you know, as something that nobody else's chart is like yours. And you can meditate on it like some sort of beautiful, beautiful mandala that is yours. It's your imprint. And
nobody has another one like that. Not even a twins. I did a lot of research on twins. They're born seconds or minutes later. Their charts are different. That's how fast it goes. Even the sextuplets and things, they come out at a different second, a different time. And their chart is different.
But isn't there such a thing as an astrological twin? Somebody born the same time, the same moment, the same day, the same town. And they would have. What are they?
They
like?
Have the same chart. There is an interesting question, Kate, but they're brought up in two different environments.
Okay.
And the interesting thing is the choices that they make with the placement in the environment in the chart.
Okay.
I mean, one person could be, you know, a murderer or something, and the other person could be a priest. I mean, it's so very interesting to see how placement and environment works with the chart.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I did a lot of work on that too. That's a fascinating thing to delve into. And
people who
survive horrific things and come out. But I am a really optimistic astrologer. I believe that what God really is placed inside is superior to the mountains that stand in the way. So what the chart shows you are the mountains a lot of times that stand in the way. And when somebody says, oh, my gosh, you know, I've been through this before, maybe not exactly, and I've been through this. When you say, oh, I've been through this before, or I'm in the third relationship that's exactly like this, you better start thinking.
Right. And the chart can point the way to uncovering what it is you need to look at.
Yeah. And I always, my saying is, what you think of me is none of my business. But if what you think of me is bothering me, then it is my business. If somebody says something and you have worked it all out, it's neutralized. You go, well, I guess that's what you think and that's what I think. And, you know, we have a difference of opinion. If you have a charge around that, hey, no. And then you say, thank you very much for bringing that up, even though, you know, and equally to the other person, what they think I'm saying, it's none of their business either, unless it's a charge, you know, unless you really go, ooh.
Oh, here's a question in the chat room. And the person did the question in bright red.
Well, that's
says,
good.
Can very Mars and Aries sort of red. And it says, can you really tell if someone is going to be a murderer?
Oh,
and then
I love the way they latched on to that one. They didn't latch on to the priest, did they?
Well, you being the optimistic and positive astrologer, I doubt
it. Yeah, if you have a Mars, if you have a Mars-Pluto thing, a lot of astrologers look at that like, oh, my God, look at that aspect, okay? And
uh-huh.
They could predict, oh, my God, that could be a murder, Mars-Pluto, because Pluto can be violent, and Mars is, you know, attack.
Yeah.
But in the other sense, it could be a very powerful person that searches solutions for everybody. So it's two different ways to read an aspect, and it's two different choices that person has in the environment that they're brought in, and what they pull into their sacred circle, and how they choose to react to it. It's
uh-huh.
not the card, as I said in my blog, it's not the cards you're dealt, it's how you play them.
Right.
And so, basically, you know, if somebody, like, say, Robert Downey Jr. was deep into drugs, and
yeah.
he had been to 45 different drug places, and even Sean Penn took him to the rehab. I mean, if Sean Penn put me on a plane to a rehab, I would be impressed. He walked out the back door. But something clicked in him esoterically, and he went in to the art of Qigong and all of that, and that literally brought him. It's the same aspect,
mm-hmm.
you know. It's a Neptune Mars conjunction, but instead of using it to destroy, he switched it around, and it's also a great movie actor. Let's face that too. He started to use his craft, and he started to, and he found this wonderful woman he fell in love with, and all the aspects in his chart could be either a drug addict or a famous actor that worked with Chun Qi in the higher esoteric art. So there you have it.
And he was actually both.
Yes, but what he learned, you know, it's a whole other show about the spirituality of addiction. I'm really deep into seeing that, because the spirituality of the test of addiction is that you have to overcome your own will.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody else outside of you can do it. You can go to rehab. You can have people talk to you. You can have whole family shun you. I work with it a lot. All of that stuff. Unless something clicks inside, forget it. That's why these 14 days, 15 days, even 30-day rehabs do not work. It has to be at least 125 days or more.
Mm-hmm.
Because it has to. You have to do something that replaces it in the chart. And that means that you can choose one aspect, how to use this aspect one way or another way.
Right.
You can choose to be, you know, before this, Oprah's magazine, I was reading Oprah magazine about the mother of the Columbine student, you know. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, this mother, I was just weeping. She just didn't have a clue about what was going on there with this kid, this Clyball kid.
Oh.
I mean, she really didn't. And when she she is literally shunned, she's talking about. People won't talk to her, and people say it's their fault, And the point is, you know, this child was suicidal. He was really, and did not reach out for help in any way. So, you know, well, that's not an up note to finish on, is it? Okay, well, too bad.
Something quick. I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. The world has a lot of misery and it has a lot of suffering, but I don't choose to resonate with it. Even though I'm a nurse, I go into the environment of suffering every time I go into the hospital. And you might think that labor and delivery is very joyful, and maybe 50% of the time it is, but my God, there's a lot of suffering with that.
who is it that wrote about that and said, I love this, Kate, you'll love this, that if aliens came and visited the delivery room of the screaming and yelling and blood and agony that goes on, they would be going, oh, my God, what is that?
Well, yeah, blood splattered all over the room. Oh, my God.
Screaming and yelling. It was. I thought that was very funny, you know?
But a nurse told me the other night that the amount of blood that's in a delivery room is nothing like, and she worked in a place where there's a lot of liver failure from alcoholism. The blood, they would try to revive these people, and blood would splatter out all over the place, out of their noses, out of their eyes. And, oh, my God, I said, you've got to be kidding me.
Well, at least you're delivering something joyful into the world.
Yes, I mean,
something joyful comes out, all the blood and the screaming and whatever.
And
are we? We're ending the show on an up note.
Well, it's Halloween. What the?
Not yet.
We're gonna end the show with a happy birthday to Kitty and get us all back in a happy place.
Sure. Well, it certainly is wonderful to meet you, Joan.
It's wonderful to meet you. I have enjoyed this. As I said, I don't understand it. I can just accept it and go with it. And I love what you're saying about the show, too.
Okay. And, as of this moment, don't tell your story that you don't understand it. Say, I will understand it.
I will
understand it. Yes. There you go. I will understand
it. I will understand it. I can do that. And
it's the mockingbird at the window. That's what it is. You don't understand the mockingbird either, do you, yet?
No.
So, and now astrology has come into your life at this moment, the same as the mockingbird. And Kitty was hot into astrology, so she must want you to get it there, Joe.
She's saying, pay attention.
Yes.
She was also into nature, you know, so all this bird activity. And I should look that up. I had this wonderful book called Animals Speak.
It's the greatest book.
I did look it up. I did look that up, Joan, that one time. One morning I was telling you.
Who wrote Animal Speak, Joanne?
Andrews.
Yes, I use that book all the time. It's like, I love that book.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes.
I met that guy one time. He's truly phenomenal.
Mm. And what does he do?
He wrote that book called Animals Speak, and the whole idea is that any animal that comes into your life, like the mockingbird, or that has, it's not like if you walk out into my backyard and you see a bird that you see every day, that wouldn't really be the same. But a bird that you don't usually see, like that wild turkey that came into my yard last winter and never came back again, came for a few days, I took a million pictures of it and it disappeared. And so I looked at the significance of what this bird was telling me in my life. And the same would be true of the mockingbird. I mean, even though, as my husband wanted me to know, is that the mockingbird is very, very common in the South, they don't always run at your window like that.
No,
so,
they don't.
Yeah.
Not for days on end.
And the mockingbird will be in that book.
Yeah. So we'll look that up again and see what that's about.
See where we go with it. Yeah, because that's interesting. I've had birds fly into the window before, but not return.
Uh-huh.
You know, and
well,
this birds have continued.
Birds are air, which is knowledge. Something of knowledge is trying to get to you to open your brain up to something.
Wow.
Well, I had a cardinal like that one time. A cardinal kept ramming into my window, and I felt like it was I felt immediately some sort of energy that was asking me to will something into my life.
Mm-hmm. Well, I had crows. This big crow used to come when I was doing a chart almost every time.
Oh,
and
that's beautiful.
He used to sit out here, but now, you know, they did this whole thing about not having crows anymore, and then he disappeared.
I wrote a lens about that.
Oh, yeah.
And that lens,
always.
My crow lens just got an angel blessing today.
Did it?
Yes.
Fabulous.
We have 1 minute. 1 minute left on the show, so
I'm looking.
Use it wisely. So we're just going to use it with laughter, right?
Right. Well, thank you, and we love you. And I'm
we love you.
To have you.
Thank you so much. This was great.
Peace, love,
yeah.
And out.
Peace.
Okay, bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye. And Joan, I'm going to play the music of For Mother and Child by Barik Abu and Klaus Jensen. So enjoy. I love you, Joan.
I love you, Kate. Thank you.
Thank you.